I think we've all heard of the heroine of Hanukkah, of Yehudis, but I think if I asked you for the story, other than a few details about something about cheese and a little bit of wine, I'm not sure how clear in the end the story would be. So I wanted to look at the story today. The details of the story, who she was, what prompted her to act, and then we'll see some other questions as well. The important point to start with is that the Gemara, and seemingly in Chazal, there is no mention of this woman, of Yehudis, or of her story ascribed to a different person. No mention at all. It does appear in Halacha, which is why it seems to have lived on, and that was already brought together by the Rishonim, and that had led some, which we'll talk about soon, has led some to the conclusion that the source from the Rishonim was the Book of Judith. Now, the Book of Judith is one of the Sfarim HaChitzonim, the Apocrypha, as they're otherwise known, Ben Sira, and other books that were written by Jews, probably by Tzedukim, and probably for that reason were never included as part of the canon of Tanakh. And whether they should be read, shouldn't be read, they certainly are not usually used as a source of halacha. But since that story does exist there in great detail, we'll go through at least the highlights and outline the story as it appears in the Book of Judith, because it's going to be important to some of our details later. So some have suggested that that was the source that the Rishonim had, that such a story existed, and we'll have to examine that as well. So what are some of the halachos that we learn out from Yehudis? So the first is that women are obligated to light Neros Chanukah. Normally it's a time-bound mitzvah saseh shehazman grama, a positive commandment which has a specific time, and normally a woman would not be obligated. A woman can do it if she wants to, but a woman would not be obligated. But here the Gemara says, Achim hayu ba'oso hanes, they were also included in the miracle, and therefore they're also obligated to light. The Shulchan Aruch says that there is a minhag for women not to do malacha, not to do work while the candles are burning, or at least during the first half hour of the burning. It's very interesting. They found a lot of different tshuvas in terms of trying to figure out exactly what work means. Don't worry. They all think that cooking is fine and cleaning is fine.
And what about us lighting our own menorah?
I'm not going to talk about that so much. It's fine. I'm not going to talk about what the positive or drawbacks are to that.
I mean, so we're not allowed for 8 days from doing anything?
For 8 half hours. It depends. It's a nice thing to do. For us, watch the candles. So that's another thing which is brought down based on the story of Yehudis. The most famous one is a minhag to have cheese or to have other milchik food. And the Bach says that there's even a mitzvah to have different seudos, have festive meals. Okay, so where does all this come from? So the Gemara in Shabbos says that in Daf Chof Gimel, that the women are obligated in Neros Chanukah, Achen Hayu Ba'os HaNes, they were also in the Nes. How were they in the Nes? How were they part of the miracle? Says Rashi, Shegazru HaYevonim Al Kol HaBesulos HaNisos SheYivolu LaHegmon Tchila Va'al Yidei Yisha Na'aseh HaNes. One of the Greek decrees was that a Besula, a virgin, before she gets married, has to spend the night with the Hegmon, which is going to be the leader. It's not going to be the king. These are more subdivisions, the general in charge. And then she can go to her husband. And through a woman, the nace happens. What nace? Rashi doesn't tell us. He just says there was this decree. And Ayidei Isha, and through a woman, the nace happened. He doesn't mention who the person was. He doesn't mention who this woman was, who the woman involved is. He has no mention of what the nace was. And it's also not 100% clear from Rashi, is that two separate reasons or is that one thing? Meaning the first thing he says is that there was this gzeira, there was this decree that involved women specifically. And Ali Deisha Nase Anase. So is that a continuation and something connected to that gzeira, something connected to that decree led to a miracle by a woman? Or no, it's two separate things. There was one aspect of the reason that they're included is because they were part of the trouble. They were part of not causing the trouble, but part of the experience of the Greek. It wasn't just on Limud HaTorah, it wasn't something focused on Brit Mila specifically on men, but it included women also. So when they were saved, the Yeshua, the salvation, was for women as well. That would be on the one hand. And then there would be something else, V'ayi De'isha Nasa Nes. Also, in the context of Hanukkah, a Nes was done by a woman. So it's unclear from Rashi, is he talking about one thing, is he talking about two things? And it is interesting that he has no mention of what the miracle was, or who the woman, was. As a little bit of an aside, well, I think we're going to get back to this a little bit later, but this decree of the Greeks seems to be a little bit strange. And I'm not trying to make the Yevanim into big tzaddikim, but the other decrees that we know of are very, very different. When you had a decree against learning Torah, against Shabbos, the three famous ones are Shabbos, Mila, and Rosh Chodesh. These weren't things that they were trying to take something away from the Jews and through that gain some sort of pleasure for themselves. It wasn't, high taxes, trying to steal their money or something like that. It wasn't something which gave them any pleasure, but rather it seemed to be that they were attacking the spiritual nature of Klal Yisrael. But this one just seems to be some sort of crude tactic of the Greeks to pleasure the king or the general. It doesn't seem to have the same characteristic to it. So just in terms of putting it into, again, it could just be they were Greeks and they were Rishonim and this is what they wanted to do, and they were, again, the Greeks certainly were a society that was focused heavily on pleasure. But it just, in terms of the other gzeros that we know, it just seems to be, it doesn't seem to fit in so well. Well, hopefully we'll get back to that a little bit later. The Ran, in his Perush on the Gemara, basically says the same thing as Rashi. So again, he mentions this decree that every Kala, before she gets married, has to spend the night with the general. And Al Yedeisha Nasa Anes. And then he adds in the following. The Amrinam the Medrash, because we say in the Medrash, or it says in the Medrash, the Bito Shel Yochanan, the daughter of Yochanan. Now Yochanan could be one of two people. Yochanan is, we have Matisyahu ben Yochanan. Matisyahu is the father of Yochanan, which would mean that this lady that we're about to talk about would be the sister of Matisyahu. Or, I guess in naming children after a grandparent, the Matisyahu also had a son named Yochanan. So this would be possibly talking about Matisyahu's granddaughter. It's certainly not, at least according to the Ran, and probably else anybody else, talking about Matisyahu's daughter, which I think a lot of people do equate the story with Matisyahu.
This decree was not exclusive. This is all women. It was not exclusive to Jews.
I don't know.
It happened in many countries.
In this context, it was specifically, and we'll see in other midrashim, it seems to be that it was specifically against the Jews. But maybe they got the idea from others as well. So he says, "Damina Medrash." It says in the Medrash, "Debito se Yochanan, the daughter of Yochanan, heachila lerosh oivim gvina leshechruso." She fed to the head of the enemy cheese in order to intoxicate him, in order to tire him out. And she cut off his head, and all the enemies ran away. That seems to be the quick synopsis that most of us know about the Yehuda's story. And therefore we have the minag, we have this custom to eat cheese on Chanukah. So there are a few important points that are added, and yet some are still missing from the Ran as well. First of all, the Ran tells us he has a source. He says, it says in the Medrash. So he has some sort of, primary source that he's working off of. He tells us who the person was. It was the daughter of Yochanan, but he doesn't mention a name. We still don't have the name Yehudas anywhere. It's not mentioned in the Ran. And we have the cheese. The cheese has finally made its way into the Ran, and we have that source. The Kolbo, another one of the Rishonim, adds a little bit more detail. He doesn't mention the rule of marrying having to spend the night with the general. And he says, based on Agada, that her name was Yehudas. So basically seems to be the same story as Iran. Maybe this is the same story that Rashi's referring to. Also, again, Rashi didn't tell us what the miracle was. And again, many other Rishonim at least do have some sort of mention of the some sort of story involving cheese or the daughter of the Kohen, or at least some sort of woman and a Gzera. Okay, that's what we seem to have in the basic literature. But the question is, that many have tried to grapple with, is that since there's no mention of the story anywhere in Chazal, so where did the Rishonim get it from? What was their source? So some understood that they got it from the book of Judith. Again, it seems to be very difficult to imagine that they gave any clout to something which is only found in the book of Judith. There are many stories that are found in the Apocrypha that certainly we don't care for at all. And it seems to be a little difficult, but there are other difficulties in assuming that it's true as well. So the first is that the Ran and the Kobol both said that they are quoting a Medrash. It's one thing to say that they would be willing to take something from the book of Judith, but to give it the significance of referring to it as a Medrash the same way they would to something which came from the Tanaim or came from other early sources seems to be very difficult. And the biggest problem is that vital details of the story are changed from the book of Judith to what the Rishonim are telling us. So I'm going to try and summarize the book of Judith. It's not so long. And we'll try and highlight and point out some of the way the story is reported there. And I think that will help highlight some of the inconsistencies between that and between what the Rishonim have told us. And we'll see if it makes any sense to assume that this is the source for the story. Starts off, Nebuchadnezzar, Melech Ashur, Hamoshel ben Nineveh. So this is a story about Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Ashur, who was the ruler in Nineveh. And he says that he was fighting his battle. And Shalach Nebuchadnezzar, es Tsar Tzivo. We're going to assume the general involved in the story, he has slightly different names in every version of the story. The one that seems to be most common is Eliporni. That's going to be the person who's involved. That's the general of the, we'll see of who. But that's the general who's going to have his head chopped off at the end of the story. So Nebuchadnezzar sends his leading general, Eliporni, to knock out and to destroy anybody who didn't bow down to him along the way. The Jews heard that he was coming and they became very afraid. Jehoiakim is the Kohen Gadol, and Jehoiakim sends to the cities and starts trying to arrange for the Jews to fight back, to find out who this person is and why this person is coming. The siege is laid upon Yerushalayim. And it's basically they're about to give the enemy surrounds and make sure that no water can come into Yerushalayim. They're starving, they're thirsty, they're not sure what they're going to do. And they're almost ready to give up and to give themselves over to the enemy. But in the city there was an almana, a widow, Mishevet Shimon, who was from the tribe of Shimon, Yehudis Shimon, her name was Yehudis. And Yehudis was this very special person, and she spent time davening, and she got herself all ready, and she dressed herself up, and she took in her basket lechem, she took bread, yayin, she took wine, and she took tzimukim, she took raisins. And she went with her maidservant, and they tried to leave the city. They asked if they could please leave the city and try. And she said, "I'm going to see what I can do to get the general to give up his attack against the Jews." The general became enthralled with her and made this big party in her honor. And she gave him from the wine that she brought to him, and he drank, and he was so excited about this new woman that he had found that he sent everybody else out. He drank up all this wine together with her, and he fell asleep on his bed. She dives to Hashem, takes his sword out of his sword holder, and chops off his head. She puts it inside her bag of some sort, and she runs out. And that's the basic story. Now, the few obvious problems.
An ace.
Sorry?
How is this an ace?
How is it an ace?
Like, it talks about the nace that happened, so why is it...
The fact that he didn't just take her and kill her right away, and the fact that that he fell asleep at that time, and that the
similar
became
to
very similar. Then in fact, there are some from the right that she was a Gilgal of Yael, whatever exactly that means.
Yeah, I kept thinking of the story.
That's one of the reasons why
we're
really eunuchs. We're going to try to clarify as much as possible. I'm not the resident historian here, so we'll have to stick with more with what Chazal say.
But
it is very similar.
But the saying, if you would just said before, is that the Jewish women were obligated to go to him the night before they got married. So by the nace would be by her decapitating him. Then
they stopped it.
They stopped it. I mean, who were they going to go to?
Right, but it happens to be, again, just in terms of figuring out what's going on, there was no mention of that decree anywhere in the book of Judith. So again, in terms of the important points that come out of here, is first of all, there's no mention of the Greeks. It talks about Nebuchadnezzar. What does Nebuchadnezzar have to do with the story of Hanukkah? Wrong king.
I'm also, so how they tie that in?
Yeah, this is the book of Judith. This is the, again, people are trying to, this is considered to be an outside source. This isn't what we would normally call a valid Torah source. There are those that want to claim that since we don't have any source in Chazal for it, that the Rishonim who said that we have halachos based on the story must have gotten from the book of Judith. What I'm just trying to show is that from the book of Judith, it's impossible to have gotten this. The inconsistencies are too much.
Yeah.
It says that she's from Shevet Shimon, no mention of a Kohen Gadol. The Ran talked about a Kohen Gadol.
Right.
And then, of course, there's no mention of any cheese. Not that that matters so much, but if the Ran is telling us that there was a miracle that happened and he mentions that there's cheese and the minhag is based on that, obviously this isn't his source. It wasn't that the Ran was in the cheese business and decided to include this detail and make it up because he wanted there to be a minhag of cheese so that he could make more money.
Who said this was his source?
The scholars.
Who's the scholars?
I don't remember. I didn't particularly.
What are we refuting here? That's what I'm asking. Why are we refuting it?
Why are we refuting it? Because this seems to have been the mainstream of thought for a few hundred years. That since there was no... Well, we'll explain why that changed. But that seemed to be the thought. It's not just scholars. There were rabbanim along the way who assumed it as well. And were just off these... Because they were stuck. Again, there were no sources. And the Rishonim are telling us something. The Rishonim aren't making it up. But again, the inconsistencies, and we'll explain why the Rishonim, why some of these Rabbanim may have made mistakes along the way. But again, the important point is that there's no mention of the decree. And Rashi and the Ran clearly are connecting the story of Yehudis and the decree that the Kala has to go to the general first. There's no mention of Yavan, of the Greeks at all. And she's from the wrong Shevet, and no mention of the cheese, which again, in a vacuum, isn't so important, but in terms of being the source for that minhag, is problematic. Okay. So it seems pretty clear that the book of Judith is not the source for, put that away, it's not the source for, it's not, doesn't even have to go into Seamus, and it's not the source for, it's not the source for the Rishonim. But the truth is that pinpointing the timing of the story of Yehudis is actually an issue in Halacha as well. Now whether or not, again, according to some of the Mefarshim that we'll mention shortly, this was based on their assumption that it did have a connection to, and we'll see how they explained it, to the book of Judith, or whether it was true anyway. It still doesn't account for everything, but it seems to be that the book of Judith did play a role in some of the Mefarshim understanding when it took place. The Tzemach David, who was a student of the Ramah, says that we don't know really much about the story because Josephus, which is again a historical source that we do often use in terms of it not assuming that it's not swayed, at least gives an accurate portrait of what happened in history. He has no mention of it. Chazal have no mention of it. And the Rishon connected to Hanukkah. And the book of Judith says that it was Nebuchadnezzar. So he brings up all this and he says, I don't know when it happened. He says, I'm just not sure. I have all these different sources. He says he found another source that connects it to Koresh and to Persia. And he, between all of them, he just leaves it as an open question when exactly this story took place. Now, there are scholars that suggest that the book of Judith really is talking about the story of Yehudis and the story that the Rishonim are talking about. But in order to record those details at that time, they had to change the details. In order to be able to record such a story when the Greeks were ruling, so it would have been dangerous to record it the way it happened. And they suggest that that's why Yehudis has a very similar name to Yehuda. And really, it's the story of Yehudis didn't actually happen at all, and it's all just some allegorical tale to relate the story of the Maccabim. I don't really buy that one either. We're on the same page now. Fine. So, the Mamloes suggest, from other people, that there were two different stories about two different valiant women, and they were both named Yehudis, and that's where some of this confusion emerges, and that will help account for some of the details, because some of the details come from one story, some come from the other. Rabbi Yaakov Emden says in his Moreh Tzia, I didn't make this up, this isn't me talking, should I read it or not?
Go for it.
Okay.
Should we close
up? I'm just reading. He's commenting on where in Shulchan Aruch it says that there's this minhag not to do malacha, not to do work when the candles are burning. And he says, he's quoting from those that say that the minhag is specifically for women. And he says, "V'huz al hosif lomar shneis Chanukah kemoki nasai dinashim," that the miracle of Chanukah happened through women. V'ze davar badoy, and this is something that was made up. Afal pisha kasvu king tas mefarshim, even though some of them mefarshim say that it happened. Ki be'emes, because in truth, ein shaychus klal inashim b'neis Chanukah yoser min ha'nashim. The women had nothing to do more with Chanukah. They're on the same level as men, but they had nothing more to do with the miracle of Chanukah than men did. So why did Chazal say afein hayu ba'osof ha'neis, that they're obligated in Neis Chanukah? So it's like Rashi said, shayavanim gozu alu isha and yisei shetivo lehegmon tchila, that the women had this gzeira that they had to be with the general first. Shegzeirasim haraos hayu kolos l'nashim k'mon l'nashim. And Rashi just pointing out that the gzeiros wasn't just on milah, it wasn't just on something that applied specifically to men, it applied to women also. And therefore, when the miracle happened, what was the miracle? I guess the miracle was the battle. Doesn't fit so well in the end of Rashi. It sounds like it was through a woman that the miracle happened. But they would be included as well. But lo shehein heina hayusiba v'gorim l'neis, but not that they were the cause of the miracle. Kanoda misefa mechamas hachashbo nomu medivrei hayusifa. Because he says in Josephus and in the other historical books, there is no evidence of any story that's uniquely about a woman causing any nays to happen. And then he says, oh, but we have even amongst the Yotzros, the different piyutim that were written at an earlier period, the poems include this this nays as well. So what are they talking about? It says, Gama paiten Ashkenazi, biyoter de Shabbos Chanukah, Yerbev Maisa Shneinissim Mischalfim. He mixed together a few different stories. Urechokim Me'od Bizmanayim Zemizan. There were two different stories, but they happened in very different periods. They had nothing to do with one another. So he says there was some story of the Nates of Yehudis. Perhaps he's acknowledging the way it is in the book of Judith. It was something which happened a long time beforehand at the time of Nebuchadnezzar. And whoever was writing this poem decided that story never really had its moment to shine. And on Chanukah we're giving hallel, we're giving thanks to Hashem. So it included that nace as well. That's what Rav Yaakov Emden says. But the truth is that it seems to be that as much as he says it was made up, and some of the Mefarshim made a mistake, the Mefarshim that he's talking about are Rashi and the Ran and the Rashba and Tosfos, and it's very, very difficult to assume that they were mistaken. It's understandable where he was coming from, because he didn't have any...
But if Yosef could make mistakes...
It seems to be. I know. It seems to be that he was. It seems to be that he was mistaken. Again, it's understandable given what was available at that time. He didn't have any other source besides the Book of Judith. But already others after him, the Minchas Elazar and others from strongly attack Rav Yaakov Emden for his attack on the Rishonim. The Aruch HaShulchan also says that there were two different stories that took place at two different times. He thinks the story of Yehudas might actually have taken place at a later time. And he says that since it wasn't enough to cause an entire Yontif to be created, so we stuck it all together and we recall it on Chanukah. Now, so what's changed? So, again, I'm not the researcher or anything, but I found two svarim that basically did all the research in terms of the history and in terms of Chazal. And apparently in the last about 150 years, Midrashim have been discovered that do recall and do tell over the story of Yehudas. And it seems to be that it was amongst those Midrashim, which again, Rabbi Yaakov Emden didn't have in that middle period, but the Rishonim, perhaps long beforehand, did have in front of them, and therefore they had a strong makar, a strong source for what they wrote.
Where were they discovered?
I have a list. In different Genizas. I don't remember if it was Cairo, I think in Oxford, I don't remember. I can show you afterwards. He goes through here where each of them was found. Whatever it is. It's beyond me. But the truth is that there are some differences which are very interesting between the different Midrashim. Again, it seems to be that it does accurately represent the stories, but with some differences. I want to take some time to see how the story of Yehudas actually unfolds in Chazal, in the Midrashim that seem to be the source for the Minhagim. Now, some of the Midrashim only record specifically this story of Yehudas, and some retell the story of Chanukah as a whole. So the first question is, what is the connection between Yehudas and the Gzeira that Rashi spoke of? Rashi and the Ran seem to connect the decree of the Greeks that the Kala, the bride, needs to spend the first night with the general. What does that have to do with the Nais? So the Medrash relates the following story, and
you say she was an almana, right?
Yehudas was an almana.
Right,
Yehudas was an almana.
So it didn't affect her.
It shouldn't have affected her, and we don't see that she was getting married either. So what's going on here? So the Medrash relates as follows. Part of the story actually exists in Rishonim already, but I'll try and summarize based on the Medrash. The Yevanim made a decree that any kala the first night before she's getting married needs to spend the night with the hegemon. This is again what the Medrash records. When Bnei Yisrael heard about this, they didn't know what to do, and they basically stopped getting married. It wasn't they didn't know they didn't have an alternative solution. And it says v'hayu benos Yisrael bogros umaskinos kishen besulos, and the girls were getting older and older. And there didn't seem like there was going to be any possibility of them getting married. So that's basically what happened next. Again, there's slight differences. It's hard to put together as many judgments as possible. But it seems to be that at that point they decided to have some sort of secret weddings, and they had a certain sign that people would know if somebody was getting married. And it was going on like this, at this point, for 3 years and 8 months. And then Matisyahu's daughter was getting ready to get married. Now we have at least a Matisyahu back in the story. And it came time for her wedding, and there was no way to hide her wedding. Matisyahu was a very public figure, and there was no way that they could hide her getting married from the Greek hegemon, from the general. So they don't know what to do. So they're making this party. They're getting ready for the wedding. And they realize they're going to have to give her over to the general. And everybody was gathered together at the Suda, Kol Gadol Yisrael, Nader Matisyahu, and this other, and the distinguished Chaslan, and the distinguished Kala. Ukshayashvu Lisod, when she stood up, this medrash says that her name was Chana. Whether her name was Chana or something else, is different midrashim say differently. But this Bas Matisyahu stands up. The Kara Por Piron Shalav Amdu Lifnei Ko Yisrael Kishim Megula Vusen Avia V'ima V'chosna. And she removed all of her clothing in front of her father, in front of all the Zakanim that were there, in front of her mother, in front of her in-laws. Kevin Shiro Acha, her brother, saw what happened. Mispaishu, they became embarrassed. Benasnu Pnei Bakarka, they looked down. The Karbigdayim, they tore their clothes. V'amdu Alel Hargan, they were ready to kill her for the embarrassment that she caused. Amru Lahem, and she said to them, Shimuni Achai V'dodai, listen to me, my brothers, my aunts, my uncles. Uman Bishvil Shamadit Lifnei Tzadikim Aruma Blishuma Veira Harayatem Iskanim Bi. If we're standing here, I didn't actually do any sin that can compare to what would happen to me later. Okay, I removed my clothing, and for that you're ready to kill me. And you're not going to stand up to the fact that I'm going to have to be with a guy tonight? You should have learned the lesson of Shimon and Levi. They didn't stand for what happened to their sister. They attacked. And they destroyed all of Shechem. And Masri Nafsham, and even if it would have been that they would have been killed, they would have said this was appropriate. This is what should have been done, because this can't be done to our sister. And at that point, they said, and they realized that she was 100% right, and that it took something dramatic for her to get her points across, but they realized that she was 100% right. Now, there are slight differences in the story, but the basic idea is both Asha and Niskanu Achav Amru Bo V'Notzul Eitzel Manasseh. Let's think of a plan. Let's decide what to do. Notzul Eitzel Zemizeh, they discussed it. V'Amru Bo V'Nalichenu Eitzel HaMelech HaGadol. We should take her to the king. Whether this is the actual king, whether this is the king of that area, isn't 100% clear. It doesn't seem like it was the king. And we're going to tell her, Achoseinu Bas Kohen Gadol. This woman she's a very important woman. She's the daughter of the Kohen Gadol. Ve'em Mechol Yisrael Gadol Me'avinu. Our father is the Gadol Ador. He's the greatest person, the greatest Jew alive. And you want our sister to spend the night with some lowly general? She should be with the most important person around. And they put together beautiful chuppos, and they sang, and they danced with her, and showed tremendous respect, and brought her to the palace to give her over to the king. And when they got there, and the king saw the tremendous kavod that they were showing him, that they were giving him this very special girl, he ordered everybody out of the room, and the brothers killed them. And they destroyed the king, and they began attacking, and they began their revolt against the Greeks. Again, slight differences in terms of who they killed. And that's the story which relates to the decree that happened. This decree came out, and she realized that first of all, how could they do this to her? And also, I think some Midrashim point out, she realized that if they're willing to give her over, then every other girl is going to take the same lesson. I say, okay, this is the sacrifice that we have to make, but if she can do it, we can do it also. Why should we sit here and not be able to get married? And for the Kiddush Hashem that she made, that began, and that wasn't the fighter, she wasn't the one who destroyed him, but she was the inspiration, she was the one who ignited this flame under them that got them moving. So that was not the story of Yehudas, and it's possible that that's what Rashi meant. Because what did Rashi say? Rashi said that the Gzeira happened, no mention of anything, and then the Nase happened. So what was the Nase? The Nase might just be that they actually were able to get to the king and kill the king. They devised this plan, and the plan actually worked. Who thought that it was going to work? And it's possible that's all that Rashi meant, and again, this has nothing to do with Yehudas. So what's the story of Yehudas? So the story of Yehudas is a different story. And the details of the story, again, some of it does compare to the book of Judith, which isn't a problem. The fact that the book of Judith would take things from Chazal is not uncommon for the Sfar Machitzonim, meaning for them to take stories and then just change the stories to make it their own, that's not the fact that would be true isn't bothersome. Okay, it's meaningless, but it's not bothersome. So again, some of the details are going to be similar, but the basic story of Yehudis is as follows. So the Greek general besieges the city, and there was this beautiful Alman, Isha Achas Yafa Ad Ma'od, this very, very beautiful Almana, this widow, Shema Yehudis. And she realized that Klal Yisrael were doing mitzvos, and they were doing the right thing, and she couldn't understand what was happening. It seemed to be that Hashem wasn't answering her tefillos for whatever reason, and she decided, being that I see that Bnei Yisrael may be deserving, maybe I should sacrifice myself, maybe an ace will happen. And she approaches she dresses herself up to be very attractive, and she travels to the gate of the city, and she tells the person at the gate of the city, I'm going out to the enemy. And they look at her and they say, at a time like this, when we need mitzvos and we need people to be doing the right thing, you're going to go and give yourself over you're betraying us. And she said, no, my kavana, my intention is completely l'shem shamayim. Perhaps an ace will happen, Hashem will give me the zechus, that a miracle will happen, and I will be able to defeat the other side. So they let her out, and she says, she opened up, and as she gets to the Greek camp, she starts saying, Yechi Yamelech, Yechi Yamelech, long live the king, long live the king, and this person in charge, and they start asking her, all the guards, like, who are you? What are you doing here? So she said, I need to talk to the king. And they tell the king that there's this very attractive lady from Yerushalayim who's here, wants to talk to you. So he said, okay. And they say, She'ein kiyofi ba'olam, there's no woman as beautiful as this woman. The Medrash relates how HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave her an extra level, measure of beauty in order to allow her to succeed on her mission. And she wants to talk to you. So he said, okay, good. Havi'o osolifanai, bring her to me. Ha'chu ve'vi'o osolifanav. Omar La, so the general says to her, Ma tiveich, what are you here for? Who are you? And she says, Adoni Amelech, Achi ve'avi, Achai ve'avi, Nevi'im hayu ve'kohanim hein. I come from a family of prophets, I come from a family of Kohanim. It doesn't say anything about Kohen Gadol, but comes from a family of Kohanim. Vishamati, being that I come from this distinguished family of prophets, I heard Shehin Omrim, Ein Ha'ir Yerushalayim Nofeles, Ela Be'ir Shesamta Be'ad HaMelech. I heard that the only way Yerushalayim is going to fall is if you are the one who attacks Yerushalayim. You're going to be the only general who can succeed in destroying Yerushalayim. But it has to be that you attack Yerushalayim at the right time. So I'm here to make sure that I will assist you, and I'll make sure that you know the right time, when is the right time for you to attack Yerushalayim. Miyad nasan la melech aman, and he believed her. Amar la imritzon chashet hinasi li vet hinlach achasim achuse. Well, you know, while you're here, why don't you marry me? I'll give you up to half of my kingdom. Sounds very familiar, right, from Esther. Amra lo, me'ayin zechusi li nasi afilu le'echad me'avdecha, for where do I merit? I shouldn't even deserve to marry one of your servants, to be able to marry the king, me'koshkein la'melech. Ella, this line is fascinating. Achshav ani b'nidasi, I'm a nida right now, I'm not pure, you can't marry me right now. Ula erev ani tovelas, tonight I'll go to the mikvah, ve'ezer etzon ha'melech, and after that, I will do the will of the king. The Medrash says something fascinating now. Ritzon HaMelech, lo amra ritzonecha. She didn't say, I'll do your will. She said, I'm going to do the will of the king. I'm going to do the will of Hashem. Adoni HaMelech, but you have to do something first. What do you have to do? Tzavei, v'yaviru kruz b'chol ha'machana, you need to send out a message throughout your entire camp. Shekomi sheroa shtei nashim halalu halchot eitz alamayon. We left out before, I'm sorry. She traveled with a maidservant as well. She said, send out a message that if you see these two particular women walking amongst the camp, that they shouldn't say anything, they should let me go, because I have to go out and I have to be tovela, so I have to go to the mitzvah later. And I have to go to the spring. Nobody should give me a hard time. Miyad immediately tziva hamelach, he commanded so. And what she said to him, he related to his people. Umeirov simcha, and he was so excited. Asa seuda gedola, he made a large meal. Vezimen kol gedola v'sarav v'achlu v'shasu v'nishakru, and they ate and they drank and they became drunk. V'nishtaker amelach yosem mikulam, he was so excited that he became even more intoxicated than everybody else. And he fell into deep sleep. He was basically like a dead person. And when his officers and the other leaders around saw the state he was in, we should leave and leave him alone. Because the whole reason that they had the king was that the king should be able to be alone with this woman who's coming back. So everybody, kol echad ve'echad halku lo'olo, everybody went back to their tent. V'nishtayir ha'melech ve'anara b'shivchoso levadam, and only the king, the maidservant, and Yehudis were left there. Kevin shirasa anara shiyashan kemei, so when Yehudis saw that he was sleeping like somebody who was dead, notlo ha'tzayif, she took his sword, v'chotcha rosha, and cut off his head. Then what did she do? Who pierced Alav Sadin, she pulled the covers, the sheet over his head, over his body. She put it into the bag that her maidservant, I guess they dumped out whatever else was in there, and the bag that her maidservant was carrying, they put his head inside it. And they went towards the Mayan. And nobody could say anything to them because the king said, or the general said, leave them alone. She has to go on this trip to the Mayan. Shekhar Tziva Melech. Omina Mayan, and from the Mayan Halku Shari Yushalayim. From there they went back to the gates of Yushalayim. Amra Lahem, and she said, Piskuli Ashar Vekones, open up the gates that I can come in. Shekfar Asa Lana Karash Baruchunes, because God has already performed the miracle. Amru Lah, they said to him, Ainat Mispayeshes, Mina Karash Baruch, you're not embarrassed for what you did, that you went to sleep with this guy? You're not embarrassed in front of God? Lodayah Shalach, the Kilkalta, Imoso, Arava Tame, it's not enough that you went to spend the night with this impure person. You want to bring them back into, you want to bring the enemy back into Yerushalayim. They didn't believe her. Acheheru es harosh, until they showed the head to somebody who was able to recognize it. And then they realized that they were wrong. They let her in, and they had a tremendous simcha. And they took the head, they put it on top of the walls of Yerushalayim, and when they woke up in the morning and the Greek army that was surrounding them saw the head on top, they realized that they were in big trouble and they all ran away. So that's the basic story. Again, there are a few differences. That's the basic story of Yehudis. Now what's interesting is that almost all of the Midrashim, except for one, have no mention of anything about cheese. There's only one medrash that actually says that they took, that when she packed up her bags to go on her trip, she packed up gvina v'chalav, and it talks about her not giving him cheese, but at least giving him milk to drink before killing him. So what might emerge is that the actual medrash that supports the minhag that the Ran is talking about might still be hidden. Again, the same way we've discovered all these midrashim in the 150 years since everybody else has commented, the actual medrash that has that supports that, again, the actual story is clear in Chazal. It's clear from the multiple midrashim. I think it's at least seven or eight different sources that have the story, again, with slight nuances. But that detail of the cheese, it seems to be that the one that we have that has the cheese is not the source of the Ran, because that one does not mention that she was from the family of the Kohanim. And the Ran mentions both points. He says that she was from the family of the Kohanim and the cheese. So unless he was putting together several Midrashim, it could be that that actual Midrash is still hidden. Now, is there any connection between these two stories? Again, there's the story of the daughter of Matisyahu who inspired her brothers to fight against the king, to fight against this decree. And then we have the story of Yehudas. And I think if we put the Midrashim together and elaborate on a few of the details that we glossed over earlier, it paints a beautiful picture of the Hanukkah story as a whole. Originally, and this will answer one of the questions that we asked at the opening, the Greeks made a decree Kol mi she'ishto holachas l'tfila, anybody whose wife goes to the mikvah, yidake b'cherem, should be killed with a sword. The kol ha'roa osa, harehi lo l'isha, banel avadim. If anybody catches her going to the mikvah, he can grab her for himself. And whatever children they have will be slaves. Or they're stuck. What are they going to do? Kevin shira yisrael kach, manu atzmam l'shamesh. So as soon as all this happened, they had to separate from their, even the ones who are married, had to separate from their wives. Kevin sheshamu yivonim kach, when the yivonim realized that that's what's going on, is that, okay, they were listening, they weren't violating the decree, but they weren't going to, they weren't living together. Kevin sheshamu yivonim kach, amru hol v'in yisrael misham shemitoseyim, anu nizkakin lahen. If they're not going to be together with their wives, so we'll take them. And that was the next decree of the Greeks. Between the two options of giving their wives over to the Greeks or being together with their wives without tefillah, they chose to be with their wives without tefillah. Amro, Ribono Shalom, Baal Karchenu, Shalom B'Tavoseinu. We're stuck. It's not our fault. Since you acted this way and it wasn't your fault, I will purify you. And each one was able to discover a spring in every house. And therefore, within every house, now the woman was able to be Tovelas. Now they saw that it wasn't working, that they were together with their wives, and I guess they had these mayanos there. So then, Gazu, Gazera, Mara.
No. Maybe they got pregnant.
Maybe. Gazu, Aleim, Gazera, Mara, Vakura. Then they had this disgusting Zera, Shilotikanes, Kalga, Belaila, Harisha, Mechupasa, El Eitzel, Hegmon, Shabimakamahu. That the only way to still be able to attack the Jews and to attack the family unit was through this gzeira of having the woman be with the hegemon first. And then nimnu umilares, then they stopped getting married, and then they started with the secret marriages, and this all led to the story of Matisyahu's daughter. Matisyahu's daughter, there was no way of hiding her wedding, and she inspired everybody else to fight against him. They went and they fought against the king, and they killed this king, whoever was in charge of that area. Says the Medrash, when the word got back to Greece that the brothers of this girl had destroyed the local king, then they sent another general to besiege Jerusalem. And it was as part of that siege that led to the entire episode of Yehudas. So everything was actually connected. It began with the Xavier, and it began with the story, but the inspiration that led to the killing of the general, or whoever it was that was in charge, this hegemon, who had to be given the besula before the wedding, that actually led to the story which then followed, which then led to the story of Yehudas. So it's interesting, I think, that... Oh, so 2 points. So one, I think this helps answer the question that we asked at the beginning, that this gzeira seems funny because it doesn't seem to fit in with the other types of gzeiras. But if you look at what the original gzeira was, that it was against tevila, that fits in very well. Because tevila is something that they don't understand, that a woman should go into the mikvah as tamei, and when she emerges, suddenly she's pure. That's something which has a spiritual quality to it. And that's something that the Greeks couldn't accept. After they couldn't get that, so then the next step was that they should be together without, they wanted them to get to be together with, right, to force them to be together without tefila, because again, that was a way of ensuring that something which seemed, again, there's no reason, why should the couple have to separate at certain times? It didn't make any sense. There's the element of the spiritual there, and they wanted to attack it. Only when they were stuck and nothing was working, and there was no other way to attack the unit of husband and wife, the unit of the bayis, that's when this gzeira of the hegemon came. It was a last resort. And in that sense, it really fit in with everything else that the Greeks were doing. And I think it's interesting
why isn't that gzeira of mikvah listed with all the other gzeiras?
So there are about, if you look through this big book of all the different midrashim, there are many, many other gzeiras. Why those are the three famous ones, I think, is because that was in the most common sources that have been available throughout the generations. If you look, there are other gzeiras, Talmud Torah, and then there's a whole list. Sukkah makes it into some, and again, there are many other ones. But I think it's interesting that of all the mitzvos, when it came to Hanukkah, that again, so the fact that a woman is obligated, sha'afin ha'yibos ha'anais, is fine, and now I think that's very much understandable. But that of all the mitzvahs in which a woman is obligated, that when it comes to Chanukah, she has the option of fulfilling the mitzvah through her husband, that ishto kegufa, that we're willing to say that the husband and wife are one unit, I think it's not a coincidence. We don't say that a woman, if she decides that she wants to shake the lulav, that her husband can shake the lulav, and it's as if she shook the lulav. It's here by the Ner Chanukah specifically that Chazal tell us that if she wants to, she can fulfill her, if it's a real obligation, lulav isn't even an obligation. She'll get credit for a mitzvah, but she's not obligated.
When it comes, she can or she should?
I'm not getting to that question. the she has the option of lighting
with Havdalah, she should.
I'm sorry?
Like with Havdalah, which we just saw last week, she should do it through her husband.
She should do it with her husband. Like she'll lose her Bina Yaseira. We don't want that to happen. But a woman does. But here specifically, Chanukah is different. And I think it's because Chanukah is a mitzvah on the bayis. It's a mitzvah on the house. It's a mitzvah on the household. And therefore, the unit that defines the house is husband and wife together. And the Greeks who tried to infiltrate the kedusha of the bayis to separate the husband and wife, or at least force them to be together in a state of tumah, which would be forbidden. But the women stood up. They realized without a strong spiritual house, the Jewish people don't stand a chance. And both Yehudis and the daughter of Matisyahu, Chana, or whatever her name was, they realized that this was such a fundamental, eternal lesson that had to be given over to Klal Yisrael, that they violated their own personal sense of tznius for the betterment of Klal Yisrael, in order for everybody else to realize how important it is to have a strong Jewish home, to have this relationship between husband and wife, be this solid unit. They were willing to give up their personal sneers and their personal modesty for the sake of Klal Yisrael. And maybe that's why specifically when it comes to Ner Chanukah, which is a mitzvah on the house, a woman can fulfill the mitzvah as a unit with her husband. Because when it comes to the bayis, when it comes to the house, then we say ishto kegufo. And that the woman has the opportunity, just as in the times of Chanukah, to be the spiritual battery of the house. The story of Chana and Shiva Banah is certainly also related exactly how, but it's certainly related to Chanukah as well. And that it's in the end, the inspiration and the nace, as it which happens in Mitzrayim also, it always comes from the women who are in the background, that the women are this innate spiritual sense which they can use to inspire the men, to keep their husband and children inspired, and to help them grow and continue seeking Hashem, and hope that the light of Chanukah will last more than just 8 days and continue on forever and ever.
By the way, Sephardim, only the men like. Sephardim.